We wanna do a little number for you now.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder. Well, actually, the Pod of Thunder has come to the Pod of Thunder. What am I talking about? Well, I'm going to tell you. But first, let's hear the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, you know, I drink too much alcohol. They call me an alcoholic. But when I drink too much Fanta, do they call me fantastic? Thank you very much. Goodbye.
All right, that's two in a row from Duff that have made me laugh. Still calling them in on a weekly basis. What other Rock and Roll Hall of Famer would do that? Guns N' Roses, Not in This Lifetime tour, just ended in Honolulu after 2.5 years of being on the road. Now the rumors are that Duff is writing a solo album all about those experiences, which is great. Hopefully Guns N' Roses will do some more stuff in the future. As of right now, Slash and Conspirators and Miles Kennedy are out. Maybe his Axl Rose going back out with AC/DC. I don't know, but I do know this. Thanks to Duff for never missing a Friday. And this week's joke, much better than the one a couple weeks ago about the elevator and the stairs that I didn't get the first time around. I actually had to text Duff and ask him what the hell the punchline was because I didn't get it. But I get this one. Fanta, fantastic. So much great stuff. But like I said earlier, the Pod of Thunder today meets the Pod of Thunder. It's the classic album clash, Kiss Alive versus Kiss Alive 2. And the other Pod of Thunder I'm talking about is the original Pod of Thunder, my favorite Kiss podcast called Pod of Thunder, with Nick, Andy, and the mysterious Chris L. They've gone song by song, breaking down every tune in the Kiss catalog, and they are coming to the end after 5.5 years. I believe it's 290 Kiss songs. I guessed it on that podcast many, many times, but they are getting to the end of it. They've debated the good and the bad of every single Kiss song ever released, even including Don't Touch My Ascot from Scooby-Doo. And Shocker from the Shocker soundtrack. We did that one. They've given every single Kiss song its own episode. They are finally up to the last song and final podcast episode coming out on Monday. So check out the final Pod of Thunder podcast and all the Pod of Thunder podcasts. If you're as much of a Kiss fan as I am, I just got Charlie Benanti from Anthrax hooked on that. So go check it out at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the podcast. I didn't know how they were going to do it at first, but they've done a great job of analyzing every single Kiss song, episode by episode, song by song. So go check them out. But before their Pod of Thunder rides off into the sunset, or is it? I heard there's rumors of maybe a season two with another band or a bunch of bands. I had to get them on the show to do a classic album clash, like I said. And of course, we're doing Kiss Alive versus Kiss Alive 2. You know the rules. Both albums have to have the same amount of tracks on them. Kiss Alive 2 barely meets the criteria. We did a little bit of a revision to make it work. But you're going to hear all about it with Nick and Chris L. and Andy, America's little brother, as we do the classic album clash, Kiss Alive versus Kiss Alive 2 with Pod of Thunder, starting now on Talk is Jericho.
You have made us the number one band in America. You did it, people!
All right, it's another fine episode of the Classic Album Clash, and today I've got all three members of my favorite Kiss podcast, Pod of Thunder, our buddy Andy.
Hey.
Nick.
Hello.
Who needs some kind of a nickname?
The Garlic Dragon.
Oh, the Garlic Dragon.
Me. Yeah.
Okay, and then Chris L, though we don't want to say the last name.
Yeah, Mom.
Just came back from the grill.
Freshly baked up, and not in that way, but just from the sun's rays and delivered back to the States from the grill, yes.
To the fine city of Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. It's quite the juxtaposition of locales. I'll say
from
that.
From the grill to Dayton. You guys said you're on the softball field?
Yeah, we were. Nick hit a home run. The equipment locker was open, so we were playing.
I have this vision of you guys just frolicking in the field.
We
like
were.
Three little buddies.
With like a winter coat on. running the bases. Yeah.
But you guys, for people that don't know, Pod of Thunder is a great podcast that they do where they analyze one Kiss song per episode, which at first when I heard about it, I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, how the hell can these guys do this?
It's kind of a tall order, right? When you hear that, you're like, how's this going to work? And even when we started, we were like, how long are we going to do this before we give up?
Right, because the idea is to go through the entire catalog. And I came on after you guys had done maybe 150 or so. Yeah. So I kind of picking shows. I remember, I think Master and Slave was one of the early ones, and King of Hearts.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like, it's really well done, and the different personalities of you guys, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. I've done the show many times. It's the first time you guys have ever done my show, so I appreciate the reciprocality.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
So is this the first time you've had three complete nobodies as your guests on the
show? Well, I'm hoping that the Pod of Thunder name will because I've had a couple. I have my best friend from high school, Spiwi, who's been on a bunch of times, so he might be even lower on the food chain than you guys, because at least you guys have a fan base.
Okay,
right?
All right.
So it's pretty low, though. I mean, you oh, yeah. If I'm a C-lister, as you call me, this is like right down in like the F, G, with G-list celebrities on this one.
Well, since you've hooked up with us, you're probably up to B-list.
Yeah, I'm up to the B-list
now. Yeah, you're on the rise.
You're
trending up.
I've got a lot of, every time I do your show, I get at least one or two tweets talking about it.
One or two, that's it? Wow.
But today, as you know, the Classic Album Clash, two albums, classic albums by a band. Today we're going to do Kiss Alive and Kiss Alive 2. Now, just before we start, the rule of the Classic Album Clash is both albums have to have the same amount of tracks. Yeah. Kiss Alive has one less live song, so we're going to continue. We're going to end it off with All American Man. That's going to be the song that we'll put up at the end.
Right, there's 16 on Alive and 15
on Alive 2.
Yeah, right.
Although there could have been more on Alive 2. It's very strange to me. Why they decided to go for the last side of Alive 2 as these bonus studio tracks rather than do other songs live.
There are plenty of songs they could have done in place of those five, so I don't know why they didn't.
Like, which ones could they have done?
I would say off the top of my head, I would go with Do You Love Me? That would be an easy one to put in. We actually have
a list.
We have a list of the songs, and we could decide from here.
Right.
These are the songs recorded on the three albums before Alive 2.
So these are, okay, so because there's songs that were actually recorded for the album that never made it. I know the three were Take Me, Do You Love Me, and Hooligan. Because there's versions that in Japan or something.
The Japanese Alive 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Did they have all three of those on it?
Hooligan on it?
I don't recall. I know for sure. I think Take Me is the second track.
It's right after Detroit Rock. Right.
Yeah, and then Do You Love Me? And I think like Rock and Roll All Night ended up on the Japanese Alive 2.
But they didn't
Alive 2, whatever it's called.
They didn't want to have any songs from Alive on Alive 2.
That makes sense.
Which makes sense, but right. They still had plenty of tracks from the previous three that could have made it.
They could have, because it's a very hodgepodge Alive 2, because I know they've taken some songs from Soundcheck. They took some songs that they weren't even playing live.
Yeah.
So they could have easily done a Soundcheck. Let me see, Great Expectations.
Probably not.
Flaming Youth.
Mm-hmm.
They play that now. It would have fit perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Pain, Do You Love Me? Should have been in there. Take Me. Baby Driver, probably never played live.
No.
Love Him and Leave Him, no. But Mr. Speed.
Could have been in there. Yeah. Why not?
See You in Your Dreams, Got Love for Sale.
We had a big debate about that. We had a three-episode, a trilogy debate about Got Love for
Far
Sale.
Far too much time for Got Love for Sale.
I'm going to disagree with you.
I'm going to agree.
What were the three versions? The one for the music, one for the lyrics, and one...
No, it was my... because I'm a big fan of the song, Nick is not. So there's one episode of me extolling its virtues. Second episode,
I know
of
that sounds.
Nick
that's such a ridiculous thing.
Trashing it, and this was it was for my episode. Nick was not present,
right,
and
okay.
Vice versa. And then the third one was
basically
all three
they were
of
trying
us.
To convince me. I was like the judge, so okay. You know, they're saying this is why this is great, this is why this is not great, each, you know, and okay. Then the yeah. Third episode was all three of us
together. It was a running joke for the 80 or so episodes leading up to it, and
right.
So we broke it out into three.
So you could have Got Love for Sale, then there's Almost Human, which I don't think they ever played live, but that's a great tune. Plastercaster, which they play all the time now, and of course, Hooligan. So there are songs, especially if we know that they had Take Me, Hooligan, and Do You Love Me, they could have easily done a couple more. No idea why they decided to go the studio track route.
Yeah, I don't know the story behind that, but it's side four, the studio track side, has grown on me over time, because at first it's kind of a head scratcher, but there's some good tracks in there.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I don't know this for sure, but my kind of feeling has always been, well, they were such a big band at that point. why not put out some songs that are potential singles when you kind of have the mm-hmm. other three sides as live greatest hits
right.
from a certain era, certain few
get
years.
Get more people to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, well, they did release, wasn't, what was the single? Wasn't there a single from the studio sides?
I don't know if they did a single at all. Did they do singles back then?
I'm going to have to look.
It was interesting. If this was your show, we could put look it up on it.
Yeah.
Look it up. also, no Peter Criss tune on the studio side.
Correct.
No. Which is showing some cricks in the armor there. First time you guys remember hearing Alive or Alive 2, which was the first one that you heard, and how?
I can go.
Chris?
I was introduced to Kiss in the summer of 77. Which coincidentally was, well, I don't, yeah, coincidentally, it was the summer of Sam in New York City.
Okay. Is that where you're from?
No, I'm from Detroit, gotcha. But my cousins, my mom's sister and her family lived on Oyster Bay, New York, which is on Long Island.
Shout out to Oyster Bay.
Yeah, man. And so for a few summers in a row, my family of four piled into our Volkswagen Super Beetle. And drove the
what
seven.
What makes it a Super Beetle? What's the distinction?
No clue. I mean, maybe
continue.
It says Super on it. Just go with it.
Yeah. So the four of us piled into that tiny vehicle and drove the 700 plus miles or so from Detroit to Long Island to hang out at my cousin's place for a month. You know, nice Oceanside community, lots of carnivals and fun stuff to do. So the summer of 77, my cousin, and listening to your previous head-to-head shows where you mention people by name from your past that nobody else would know. Before I get into it, I just have one question. That the Yoda character, what was his name again?
Brad Hadubiak.
Please tell me his nickname was Doobie.
I didn't know him that well. I just know him floating around extolling the virtues of heavy metal.
It should have been.
It probably was at some point.
I think everybody has that local figure that's a little intimidating. He knows more than I do. Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of the wise owl.
Yeah, you're a little sheepish to go up to.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was my cousin, Michael Gonzalez, who we were hanging out, you know, playing maybe a little stickball, just hanging out on a nice summer day. Busted out his portable cassette player, which had the little cassette window and then a single speaker to the right of it, like pre-Jambox configuration. Popped in the cassette of Rock and Roll Over, which had come out the previous fall. Mm-hmm. So hit play. I'd never heard of Kiss or heard Kiss before. I Want You drew me in, of course, and then Take Me was just the knockout punch. And for the next 2.5 years or so, I was all in on Kiss. So they actually sent me home with my other cousin, Mark Gonzalez, he had just upgraded to one of those just massive 70s stereos with the speaker that was taller than me and just racks of EQs.
That's how it used to be, right? The giant, giant speakers.
And, so he sent me home with his old 8-track player because I didn't have a stereo of my own. Another thing I picked up on your Metallica episode was my parents also had the record player that was a piece of furniture.
Yeah, a big desk.
Yeah, you lift up the top and the turntables in
there. You lift up the top like it's the hood of a car, and you actually put the little wedge in there to keep it standing up.
Exactly right.
So it doesn't slam on your fingers.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly right. And so I had a few favorite albums from their collection, and then they would buy me those K-Tel kind of compilation albums, but I never had my own collection of really rock music, and then the Kiss just kind of drew me in instantly. So my cousin sent me home with his hand-me-down 8-track player and went and got Rock and Roll Over on 8-track, and then the next one I bought, which was right when it came out, was Alive 2.
Alive 2, gotcha. How about you, OBA, our buddy Andy?
Oh, I would say
America's little brother.
You got all the nicknames, thank you. Properly introduced. I think Alive 2. We had both in our house. We had the cassette of Alive 2 and that very vinyl of Alive. We've had that forever.
That's the one, right?
Which does not have their little handwritten letters to the fans. No, this is some sort of dumbed down.
It doesn't have a gatefold sleeve?
No.
Wow, interesting. It's a single album of Alive 2, which is a famously double album with the letters to the fans in it.
Yeah, and it's
interesting.
Pretty old.
Wow. But, okay.
Yeah. Old enough, I guess, because it's not a double.
I'm sure, yeah, it's got to be some reprint at some point. But
so you guys Alive 2 in your house?
Yeah, Alive 2 for me, Nick.
Alive 2. I was about, I don't know, 10 or so, and fascinated by Kiss. And this was in the like late 80s, early 90s. So the makeup era of Kiss was not the thing all the kids were caring about at all. So I think I was the only one in my school that really had any interest in it. Mm-hmm. And there was so much mystique for me because I hadn't lived through the original makeup era. And then whenever I go to a record store, I would be looking like anything, like, let's look at the Kiss section. I didn't know their discography, anything. I just said, I want to go look, and saw the double tape. I have the tape right here. Double cassette for Alive 2, which the guy who worked at Hegwisch Records at the time.
Hegwisch?
Hegwisch Records, which is Chicago, technically. Right. He looked at my mom and said, are you sure he's old enough for this? And my mom looked at him and kind of looked down at me, and I'm like, yeah, believe me, I'm okay. I'm okay.
She's like, are you?
So I got it and threw it on as soon as I got home on the tape player, and it was a big event. Yeah.
Mine was, flipped it over so I can see the cover. Mine was Alive 2. Because everyone knows my Kiss story, where Animalize was my first Kiss record, because I saw Heavens on Fire video, and I thought Paul Stanley was the coolest guy in the world because he jumped through a hoop of fire. And meanwhile, I was playing Dungeons and Dragons with these two brothers that were huge Kiss fans, and I was a big Beatles guy. And I remember always looking at Alive 2 because they had the poster, which you see on the back cover,
yeah,
and the picture of Gene where he looks like just an overfed bloodworm, like a big, fat, gross, bloody monster,
yeah,
right? And just looking at him going, what? That's terrible. I hate it.
Yeah.
But much like a chick that you hate, you grow to love, I started loving these pictures. So when I finally started backtracking, mm-hmm, Alive 2 was the first one that I bought. So all throughout grade 9, I listened to Alive 2 because I didn't like the cover of Alive 1. I thought Alive 2 has to be better.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason, I just liked the cover of Alive 2. And then when I finally got into Alive 1, that is probably my favorite Kiss record of all time.
Okay. I love those pictures on Alive 2 also because they're really cool looking, but they're really unique. Like if you look up, like you go now on the internet and just do an image search for Kiss from that era, I mean, you see a lot of pictures, but those right there, there's something about them where they just don't really look like any other picture.
Once again, it's the Kiss mimicking the Beatles. And if you see the White Album, where you would get, Kiss always had souvenirs, but in the White Album, you had four pictures you got. And they're very similar to this. There's a poster that you can unfold where it's four faces, and they're all from like almost different photo sessions. And that what this looks like too. Yeah. Different lighting, different gigs, whatever it may be.
And then for Alive 1, the only thing that's a little off-putting to me about the cover is Ace never holds his guitar like that when he's playing. I mean,
like,
come on now.
It's flipped over.
That's the only time I've ever seen him hold his guitar like that.
Well, obviously, you know, it's a staged picture.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But
and another thing, too, is the gatefold for Alive 2 is one of my favorites of all time.
Well, the gatefold is...
Yeah. And you open it up, and it's just like, oh, my gosh.
Right.
Every single bomb Paul told me, but I'm sure he's told everybody, that this is like they just set off every single flare, every bomb, every flame, every light's turned on. There was never one part in the show when all of this was happening. This is another staged photograph.
Yeah,
but just blew your mind.
Peter, well, when you joined the Kiss Army back in the day, you got a full size poster of that in your membership kit.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Did you join the Kiss Army?
Absolutely.
What else did you get?
There were, you know, kind of glossy photos, like similar to the ones you were talking about. There was an iron-on decal that you could iron onto a T-shirt.
Uh-huh.
Back in those days,
the
iron-on emblems were a big deal. And trying to remember.
A membership card,
I'm sure.
When I went to the Whiskey a couple years ago, I was walking down the street, and I happened to see Anvil was playing at the Whiskey, so I walked in and saw them. And afterwards, their drummer, Rob Reiner, the other Rob Reiner, gave me an Anvil Metal Pounders Union membership card.
Oh, man.
This is like 2015. You keep that in your pocket. you might want to show people that. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I don't need it.
I don't need my Anvil membership card. But in the 70s, those membership cards meant something.
Well, right. You never know when you need, like, another form of identification when you're doing something important, some paperwork.
Is this metal on metal going to work
here? I forgot my passport, but this
that's the card you flash out when you don't want to get into some place. When you want to be thrown out of an establishment.
You're one of the Anvil Metal Pounders Union. You're not getting in. Okay, so let's go into some of this. First of all, let's talk about the covers of the record. Sure. We kind of mentioned it. You know, Alive, Kiss Alive 2 as a cover is basically just the logo, Alive 2, and then the four photos are small.
Yeah.
But it's a very iconic look. I think, I don't know, which cover do we like better? And, of course, the Kiss Alive looks like the four guys kind of all shoved in there with Peter Criss in the back.
It's kind of interesting on Alive 1 that Ace is up front.
Yeah, you're right.
That,
yeah.
You know, Paul and Gene are kind of like...
kind of in the shadows. They kind of,
to me, just if you're looking at this the first time, there's the supporting players kind of. And yeah. You got Ace right up in the
front.
It's
like Ace's lead guitar and vocals.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's like the Dave Mustaine of Kiss.
It's like if it was a Guy Man Dude record, it would have him, you know, featured on the cover.
And his bros behind him, with his child behind him. Which cover do you like better, OBA?
I would say Alive 1.
Alive 1?
Yeah. I mean, this, of course, Alive 2, the it's stylized and iconic, you know, the giant Kiss letters in Alive.
Yeah.
But I like the live photo. It's, you know, as a kid, that's more intriguing. It's like, almost, what's going on at these
It's
concerts?
Almost like the back cover should have said Kiss Alive at the top, and that should have been the cover.
That should, yeah, with the larger right? photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. That Gene photo is kind of weird. You said a overfed bloodworm.
Yeah.
I always thought his expression was sort of strange. It's almost like he's sad about something or like
he's
bummed
sulking.
Out. Like Droopy the cartoon dog kind of like, oh, no. You know.
I got blood in my mouth.
Yeah.
Again.
It's just weird. And then Ace, looking at him, his hair almost looks red because the lighting.
Yeah.
It's like, is he a redhead? But, you know, that's the only picture you see.
Good
but,
call.
Yeah.
Peter just, probably wasted.
Probably. And Paul looks like he's not really paying attention in that photo. He's just kind of.
Yeah. It's weird. I
writing a poem or something.
Maybe. Like writing some star lyrics.
He's looking in the briefcase from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. There's something glowing in the bottom corner. But yeah, I'd say Alive 1.
Nick, what's your favorite?
I'm going to go with Alive 2 because of those photos.
Gotcha.
Even though they're smaller on the front cover, I don't mind the sort of stock looking stenciled font. That's okay.
Army lettering.
And as when I was younger and I got this cassette, I mean, it's really small on the cassette. It's a thumbnail basically.
Yeah.
And I tried to draw Ace like many times. I spent a lot of time trying to draw Ace from there, and I'm not very good at
I also that, tried to draw that cover.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can looking at it, the curve of like the V on his, you know, on his outfit there. I remember trying to get that curve exactly correct.
That's another thing about Kiss that appeals to, you know, kids, especially at the time, was you could draw them.
Yeah.
Like even if you were the worst artist, you could still draw the four members of Kiss. With the
because the makeup, yeah, right. I mean, they all have the similar black hair, so that's kind of easy, even if you can't draw. And then from there, you just draw the makeup, and there you go.
Hardest makeup to draw, Aces. Never got it right.
Yeah, getting it on a round surface, forget it.
Hard. Chris, favorite cover?
Alive 1, for sure. Alive 2 is just really basic. It's like something you would learn your first day in graphic design class. And you've got the same photos duplicated on the back.
Good call.
The cover image, just there's so much going on with it. Like you said, Ace in the forefront, his guitar is upside down. Gene's pose is great. The candelabra is pictured. I really think Kiss lost a little something when they got rid of the candelabra. There was something slightly evil about that
good call.
Presentation.
And there was just one. They didn't bracket the stage. There's just one random one, yeah.
And then, do not dismiss the awesomeness of the back cover photo on Alive 1. Shot at Cobo Arena, in my hometown of Detroit. Does that not capture the arena rock vibe between acts? Like, after the opener is done, and you're ready and primed, ready to go for the opening act.
Jam-packed show. With two rockers with like the Sean Cassidy, Leif Garrett, feathered hair,
right.
With a Kiss sign. Now, there's rumors that this is actually taken at a Styx concert. And,
really?
I don't believe it for a second. But yeah, it's a Styx concert, and they just like photoshopped or whatever, the cut and pasted those guys in there.
Now, the only thing that's believable about that statement, just off offhand right now is that the Kiss Army would do that, though.
Would do a sign.
Would go to a different band show and have a
with
sign.
With a Kiss sign?
Kiss. Yeah.
Or that, yeah.
I love the guy sitting beside him. That's like Chris L. right there.
He's pissed off.
Andy and Nick are standing with their sign, and Chris is just sitting down.
That lady on the bottom right, it always looked to me like she must have been like a Spanish dancer.
Oh, she's like a flamenco of yeah. Good call.
Well, she's there to see Dennis DeYoung and hopefully appear in one of his rock musicals that would happen later on down the road.
And also the gatefold is just quickly, we talked about the Kiss Alive 2 gatefold, which is the best picture ever.
Oh, yeah.
Takes the bread. But the gatefold for Alive had letters from Kiss, and I'm going to read one of them. They're very small, though. I don't even know if I can read them. Dear Earthlings, this one Aces Leatherby. Peter says, hi, cat people. Jeans is dear
victims.
Oh, boy.
And Paul is dear lovers.
Lovers.
So there you go. You've got the small. I guess you have better eyes.
You know, because I brought my generic record that didn't have that. Yeah. But my CD has it. But
I would love to be able to read one of these two, but it's really small writing. I can't do it.
Let's see if I could try to read one.
Can you try and read one? It's really small.
Oh yeah, I can read these. Which one? Who do you want to hear? Give me one. I'll read it to you.
Dear lovers.
Dear lovers, nothing arouses me more than seeing you getting off on me.
Literally, or
I don't know. It makes me work that much harder to please you.
Wow.
My body is yours. Yours is mine. We explode together.
Damn.
When I'm on stage, I'm yours. Take me, Paul.
Ooh.
Stanley.
Ooh, that's great.
Foreshadowing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you guys think that they actually wrote these?
You know,
is it their handwriting?
You know,
they're all different handwriting.
I had Paul on. We talked about the 40th anniversary of Alive, and we had a great conversation. Talked about everything, and I forgot to ask him.
Yeah.
About that, the one little tidbit. Did you guys really write those letters?
You know that I have a CD. I don't know what year it was made, but I have AC/DC High Voltage.
Yeah.
And it's got letters like that too, but it's not necessarily by the band. It's about them.
Somebody's writing a letter.
Yeah, like from their school.
Like, stay away from my daughter, yeah. Mr. Scott. You know, yeah. Bon Scott, and, stay away. I remember that.
One from the hotel chain that, like, yes. Your guys busted up my hotel room. Here are the damages. Yes.
Yeah, I remember. That's right.
Something from school, like we're having trouble with Angus or whatever.
Young Angus is very hyperactive. Yeah. I remember that. Was that on High Voltage?
That's the one I have. It's in an old High
that's
Voltage.
Because I think Mark Evans was in the band then. And I remember him having a letter.
Mark Evans got a letter too?
Yeah.
Wow, that's rare. I thought they would just kind of.
Well, the one I have, I think, has Bond, but I'll have to check.
What is Bond? I remember the one. Like,
I'm sorry. You know, I was.
Say all of them.
No, who was the singer before Bond? He had. Was it Dave Evans?
No, it's not Dave Evans. It's Bond Scott.
Okay, that's what I thought Chris was.
Mark Evans.
I heard Mark. I thought, Dave Evans?
There was
a lot of
Evans in there. Are you going to read one more, Andy?
Sure, if you want me to.
What about the cat people?
Hi, cat people. Well, you should get your claws into this album.
Zing!
I know it's going to make your tail stand straight up. The cat himself stalked it from front to back, and it tested great. Tested?
Tasted.
It might be, but it clearly looks like an E. Probably tasted great. See alley cats.
Peter dropped out of school at 22, so his handwriting wasn't fully developed.
Hey, I got a big dick. I can't spell. Right. The fuck off.
Even then, he was running focus groups about the band to see what the audiences were liking.
Oh, my goodness.
See all you alley cats and tom cats. Rock your rolls right off, or should I say tails? You already said tails. Love you, your silver-nosed tomcat, Peter Criss.
I would have to say that Paul's kills that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I bet you as the guys were reading each other's letters that Paul and Gene were laughing.
Oh, yeah.
And how bad that one is.
It almost seems like they would... This is in the first Alive, but I almost think it would be later.
Dude, we need them all.
Okay.
We need to hear all, and then we'll get into the record. But I can't leave the Earthlings and the Victims out of this.
Yeah. It almost seems like this would come later when they became a little bit more cartoonish.
Yeah, but
no.
This one, though, they're more entrenched in their personas,
in
their makeup personas.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's do Jeans. What do you think?
Dear Victims.
Dear Victims, I love to do all those deliciously painful things to you that make you writhe and groan in ecstasy.
Chris L. is just smiling.
Before
and
he started reading this, I was going to ask, what would we predict on the creepiness scale this would be.
He was Uncle Creepy even back then when he was 23 years old.
Yeah. My spiked 7-inch boot heels are at the ready. Should you be in the mood for heavy sport? What? Oh my, that's...
Heavy sport.
Oh, my God.
It's like heavy petting, heavy sport. Some sort of shoe spiked boot fetish.
And my mouth, it's there to tell you all horrible things you never thought you'd hear, but love hearing, in parentheses,
ooh,
with an exclamation.
Ooh.
I can see you from the corners of my eyes, and I know, underlined, what you do when the lights go out. I bleed for you and breathe fire for you, and you wonder if I'm crazy, dot, dot, dot. I am.
Ooh.
Gene Simmons.
Okay. Okay. Typical creepy. Now let's see where Ace is out in space here.
And his is the only one that's in cursive.
Oh, geez.
So can this is going to be a pain in the ass. Hold on. Okay.
This is really small letters, yeah, too. Like you have good eyesight for this.
Yeah. It would have been easy to just Google image these, but it's part of the fun, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Dear Earthlings, the gravity on Earth isn't quite the same as it is on my planet, but I'm slowly getting used to it.
Is that a cover for how he was notorious for falling over?
Yeah, that's why he walks so
bad
weird.
Balance.
Yeah,
okay, that is.
Makes sense.
I always wanted to play lead guitar and express myself usually to an audience.
Visually.
There you go. Visually to an audience. Do you have this memorized?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. When I play guitar on stage, it's like making love.
Okay.
If you're good, you get off every time. And also, get off is one word. Connected.
Oh, okay.
You get off every time. Thanks for helping me get off. Love, Ace.
Okay. Paul's the best. Ace, number two. Gene, number three. And Peter, number four. Just like the solo albums.
There you go.
Well,
there's an argument there for another time.
Yeah,
another
exactly.
Episode.
If y'all want me to come out there and see ya, I'm on count to three. You say my name as loud as you can. One, two.
All right, so Alive was released September 10th, 1975, recorded at four different gigs, Cobo Arena, Cleveland Music Hall, RKO Orpheum Theater in Davenport, which is, that's not Hamel, in Wildwood's Convention Center in Wildwood, New Jersey, which is interesting. I've been there. I've wrestled there. And Alive 2 was released on October 14th, 1977. So basically about 2 years later. In 2 years, they released these seminal, amazing records.
Yeah, three records.
And that was mostly recorded August 26th to 28th in L.A. at the Forum, I believe it was. Yeah, the Forum and the Love Gun Tour. But there's a lot of sound checks, a lot of studio work. We don't need to go into specifics. We know that most of these albums were all re-recorded in the studio.
We don't need to know how the sausage was made, right?
Exactly.
We just want the sausage.
We want the sausage.
Badly.
And, very badly. So, like I said, the overdubs and all this stuff, and Paul actually said it great when he did the show. He goes, we're jumping up and down. I've got 7-inch platform heels. We're running. There's bombs going off. The sound is bad. There's bad notes. There's strings breaking. He goes, of course we recorded it. He said, get your head out of your asses. That's how all live albums are made.
Right. And
so,
the beauty of it is what by doing that, these live albums, all the iconic live albums of the 70s, basically filled in those same gaps your brain fills in when you're at one of these gigs.
Right, well, yes.
You don't pay attention to the clams. You don't pay attention to Paul's vocals fading out when he turns his head to look at his guitar.
Yeah.
The whole spectacle of it, everything is awesome in your head, and that's how these 70s live albums recreated that. That's why they're so iconic.
Exactly. Agreed.
And that's...
It's like,
you know,
Cheap Trick, Budokan,
right.
Frampton Comes Alive, all the best albums. Because, like, for example, like Alive, for me, all the songs that are on this are so much slower and I'm not going to say boring on the first three records, mm-hmm. but these ones are so much better, so much more fire and energy.
Yeah.
Whether it's re-recorded or not, this is the Kiss that I love.
Right. And if they did re-record it, they used the basic tracks as the bedrock for it. So it had that energy from the tempos. And it's just there to recreate that experience, and they did it brilliantly.
Yeah. Both records recorded by Eddie Kramer, produced by Eddie Kramer. Let's get into the track-by-track battle with two of the best opening songs of all time, Deuce versus Detroit Rock City.
Can we actually go back even further and compare the two intros?
Classic
intros?
Pot of Thunder move.
By the way, I was thinking about this, and thank you for reminding me. What's the intro for the first one, Chris?
Well, it's, you wanted the best and you got it. The hottest band in the world.
No, hottest band in the land.
Is it?
Yeah. On Alive, they were the hottest band in the land.
Okay.
Right?
Missed that. But then he goes, Kiss! And then the second one is just, I don't even think I could sum it up.
It sounds like a monster truck on the second one.
Yeah.
Kiss!
On Alive 2, that's basically what you hear if you go see Kiss tomorrow. That's like the same introduction you get all the time, Alive 2's introduction. Now, but Alive 1's a little different.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. We'll
Okay.
You know what?
Yes.
And this happens all the time on our podcast. I have always heard that as World.
So you had, but that shows their how they've grown. They went from the hottest band in the land to the hottest band in the world.
Now, the first guy sounds like someone they plucked out of the alley outside of the venue and say, hey, dude, you want to introduce
the
band?
We're not trivia guys like other Kiss podcasts, but I think that was one of their roadies called J.D. Smalling or Smalley.
Okay.
So it was a guy that they had. I think he was an African-American fella.
All right.
To me, it always sounded like they were getting the guy who directs Spinal Tap to the stage backstage, played by Wonderful Smith, was the name of the actor.
Wow.
Who was the custodian of the venue.
Take a lift over here. Yeah.
And
we don't have time for that.
And his voice is in about the same. It reminds me of the World's Best Cry. I don't know if you guys remember that from the show Intervention.
Oh, God.
I can. That's what you think of?
That's a voice
mocking a man's life-changing moment.
I always thought
that's how Nick
I'm
is.
I'm just saying the tone of his voice reminds me of the tone of that guy's voice.
I always thought the guy on Alive, the tone of his voice sounded like when you'd watch the Muppet Show and they'd introduce an act. It's like, you know, you wanted the best, you know, hottest band in the land, Kiss. Yeah. Like Skeeter or someone introducing Kiss.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like we all heard Alive 2 first, correct?
Right, yeah.
So when you hear that intro and then you hear Alive and you hear that intro, you're like, okay, this is going to suck, right? But then the action
once again
in.
Paul has another great quote and is very straightforward. He said that even though Alive sounds like it was recorded in a washroom, he still likes it. There is a difference in sonic expansiveness in that Alive 2 sounds like they're recording it in a stadium and Alive 1 sounds like they're recording it maybe in a smaller arena, for example. But still, you know, like we said.
Yeah.
All right, so we're doing Deuce versus Detroit Rock City. What do you think? Who wants to go first?
I'll go with Detroit Rock City.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And?
It's hard to pick why, because they're both, you know, high energy. First song, if you go see Kiss, they're not on tour this summer, but if you go see Kiss, if they play either one, you're going to be happy with that as an opener, you know. But I'd go with Detroit Rock City. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because Alive 2, the opening has a special place in my heart, but I picked Detroit Rock City just for the energy and the tempo and
excitement. I'm going to say Detroit Rock City as well. To me, there's certain songs that have to open. Like when Ozzy doesn't open with I Don't Know, I hate it. He's doing Bark at the Moon now and it doesn't fit. I love Metallica opening with their new songs. That's what they always do. But if you had to pick one, Battery is the song they should always open with. I can't remember the word I'm looking for. But I think Detroit Rock City, because Paul Stanley's my guy, there's a great breakdown in the middle. There's that whole guitar part. There's the drum part. Get up. Everybody's going to leave their seat. It's about going to a show.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Detroit Rock City. Although Deuce is a great opener too, but Detroit kills it for me.
Yeah, nothing against Deuce. It's great, but I'm going to go with Detroit Rock City also. And all the reasons you guys said, but another one, which may be going a bit far into the future here, the way it goes into the next song
directly
seems to, that has something to do with it for me, which we'll get to.
Chris?
I'm sure.
Detroit Rock City. I mean, it's essentially a toss up just because I like them both. But
well, Chris has the answer on his hat today.
Right.
Detroit Rock City. Well, or like I said last night.
No, reread that.
Detroit Cock City.
Yeah, you know.
We were calling it Detroit Foz City last night, which I know is terrible, but the people loved it.
Yeah. So. Oh, no. That's great. It's been born and grew up in Detroit.
It must be pretty cool to have, like, I wish someone wrote a song called Winnipeg Rock City. Like, you have a song written about your city. That's pretty cool, man.
Well, we love that stuff. And, yeah. Like, Jay Giles Band had Detroit Breakdown. Love that. And, of course, you have Nugent with Motor City Madhouse.
Yeah.
You write a song about Detroit, Detroit loves you forever. And that is the element that takes it over the top for me. But just those, how potent are the two notes that open up Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the building of adrenaline is just incredible.
The Kiss opened with it on my favorite gig of all time, the Animalize tour from 1984 amazing opener, even without makeup, still killer. Absolutely. Powerful, insane, and going straight into King of the Nighttime World, which I thought when you read the back of the album, where's the album? Right. I thought the songs were Detroit Rock City, then there's a song King of the Night, then the next song was called Time World.
Yeah.
And I thought it was some kind of a sci-fi expedition.
It could work that way. A good Ace song,
Time World. Time World. Because once again, like you said, I got this record and had no idea of any of the songs because I didn't have any of the albums before. So it was not King of the Night and then Time World. It's King of the Night, Time World versus Strutter. Both great second songs in the set, because when Deuce ends, it goes straight into the... for me, I'll take this one. I love King of the Nighttime World. It's one of my favorite Kiss songs. I love it live. I love how it goes straight into that feedback. Bam, bam, bam. So I'm taking King of the Night and Time World, the medley. What do you think, Nick?
I'm going to go with that as well. I mean, we're not to make it sound like we're collectively, well, so far, overlooking Strutter, because we're not, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have to go with that also. I like that song, particularly on Alive 2, even better than Detroit Rock City.
Oh, really?
I do, yeah. For me, it's got a little bit more of a rock and roll-y kind of thing, where Detroit Rock City is a little bit darker.
Yeah.
And this one's a little more like celebratory rock and roll-y kind of thing, so it grabbed me more immediately when I first heard it.
And in trivia department, King of the Nighttime World is actually a cover song.
Right.
Paul added a lot to it, but it was originally written by that Kim Fowler. There is a version, you can go find it by some other band, and you can hear like the first part, and there's a lot of additional parts, but that did come from another tune.
It's kind of like when we did our episode on Is That You from Unmasked. There's a whole other version.
That's a cover song as well. Yeah. Right, exactly. Our buddy Andy.
I also will go with King of the Nighttime World, all the same reasons. The transition from Detroit Rock City is great, and I prefer, not that we're really getting into studio cuts, but I prefer the King of the Nighttime World over the Alive 2 version over the studio version by a million.
Agreed.
So there you go.
I agree. Chris?
Same for me. I mean, those two songs, even if you've never heard Destroyer, they flow together so nicely. And just what an incredible 1-2 punch. I think that's another thing that's important, is not only the opener, but what they follow the opener with. Because you don't want a letdown after it. Not that Strutter's a letdown, but...
But also, too, those are the first two songs in Destroyer, right?
Right.
So that's like, it's the Fozzy tradition that we got from Iron Maiden and Metallica, where they always open with the first song on the record and then the second song on the record, every tour. Maiden and Metallica do that every
tour. I didn't
know
that.
Good move.
Every tour. I love it. Okay, so now Ladies' Room versus Got to Choose.
Mm.
When I was a kid, I would have went with Ladies' Room. I thought the lyric was, "You're such a jewel in the road."
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Such a jewel in the road.
Yeah. Like something that would make you pull over.
Yeah. A shiny jewel.
Yeah. A woman standing on the corner, perhaps.
Like, I'm going to pull this thing out of the gravel and have sex with it. But sounds like a good idea.
As I get older, Got to Choose it wins for me. It's such a great tune. I didn't realize how good it was until they did it on Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
Great harmonies. It's a little bit more mid-tempo, which is maybe why I didn't like it as much as a kid, but Got to Choose beats Ladies' Room for me.
Do you like the stage rap of Ladies' Room?
It's amazing. Some of you girls want to get yourselves kissed.
Yeah.
I say that all the time when I have a couple drinky-winkies.
Yeah.
You know? We got some good-looking girls.
Yeah.
Great. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, this one's a landslide for me. Forgot to choose.
Wow.
It's probably not that we have to put numerical values on our Kiss songs, but it's probably number two, number three for me all time.
Wow.
And that was cemented from when Andy and I went to the One Live Kiss, the one that they made that DVD out of from the Live to Win tour.
Paul Stanley, yeah.
Yeah, and it blew the roof off the place.
Right.
That song out of any other one. And then when the three of us went to the last Cobo Hall show in 2009.
I thought he was going to say the DVD release party for One God. Life Kiss. Well,
that was a disaster
Chris
for us.
Chris and I were almost ejected for being drunk and disorderly.
this was the seminal outing for what would become our podcast.
That's true. Yeah,
we were just complete.
Was Paul there? Classes.
No.
Oh, okay.
But the guy who filmed it was like
producer the
premiere
of the
party and stuff, and we were just complete jackasses.
Was it worse
no
than
reason.
Andy during the what was the podcast you did where you got so loaded you threw up on the side of the road
several times?
Which was that the Domino one?
No, it was Boys Are Gonna Rock.
Boys Are Gonna Rock.
Vinnie Vincent Invasion.
Were you drunker then or at this thing?
It's a toss. I was more rowdy at the Paul Stanley
thing.
Was. Screaming. People were sitting down. It's like a theater style thing. People would sit in front of us and Chris and I were yelling, barking things out at people on the stage. Because there was also a band playing before.
Oh, yes.
People would get up and walk away and go sit somewhere else. They didn't want to be near us.
Yeah, yeah. We had a guy turn around and give us the finger to the mouth. Shush.
At a rock thing. Yeah.
And I was the sober one. So I'm the guy. Have you ever been out with some of your friends and you're kind of the sober or at least sensible one and you're just trying to maybe rein them in gently and it's just not working. Yeah.
I had a guy do that to me at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when Nirvana was playing with Joan Jett on guitar and vocals. I was losing my mind. I was also drunk as because Springsteen's band was on for like 3 hours. Every single guy had to give a 30-minute speech when the E Street Band got in.
Yeah.
So I just went to the bar and like I was so drunk by the time Nirvana came on, I was losing my mind. And some guy was sitting there going, "Calm down." I'm like, it's Nirvana getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
If you can't go nuts at a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony, what do you go nuts at?
Yeah.
So, Chris, what do you think? Ladies' Room or Got to Choose?
Got to Choose for me, although I love the intro to Ladies' Room.
We got some good-looking girls!
But Got to Choose is what a great tune. And some unknown reason, I declined to accompany these guys to the Live to Win show at the House of Blues. Still at the top of the list of regrettable concert misses for me.
Absolutely.
I mean, that set list he busted out for
amazing.
That. Incredible.
Million to One and Goodbye.
Magic and Touch.
Tonight I'm going to play all the songs I love.
Wouldn't you like to know me? That's when he put Hide Your Heart back in the set, too.
Yeah.
It was a great, great show. I saw that in L.A. I saw it in L.A. at the House of Blues on Sunset, and Bruce Kulick and Gene Simmons were in the balcony.
Oh, that's cool.
It was pretty cool, yeah.
I give Got to Choose as well.
Wow, we're all so agreeable today.
Yeah.
This is not like us.
I think we'll be disagreeing soon.
Yeah, there will be some...
There'll be some...
some bumps in the road.
You hear same reason, Got to Choose. Just a better,
it's just a better song. Yeah. I mean,
agreed.
Nothing against Ladies Room. But
it's funny, once again, that Ladies Room was included, but Take Me was not.
Yeah.
Do You Love Me was not. Very strange.
I personally, if I could pick and choose, I would have taken that out and put Love Him and Leave Him instead if we had to have a Gene song from that era.
Oh, yeah,
that's the one I would put
Gene.
Right there. If
okay,
I could.
Right in the middle there. Okay, then we go to Making Love versus Hotter Than Hell. Chris?
I'm going to go Making Love on this one, especially the live version. It's
powerful.
It's powerful. It lacks that little acoustic element that they add in over the top on the studio version, which kind of lightens that version up a little bit. Paul's out of his mind with the vocals. I mean, he's really into it and just a great performance. Hotter Than Hell. It's cool, and when we did our episode, it was when we did our research on it or whatever, that it was sort of their version of All Right Now by Free.
Oh, which interesting.
I made that, I never made that connection before, but once I heard it, it made sense to me. But Hotter Than Hell has never been one of my favorite Kiss tunes. So for me, this is an easy one.
It's a little bit plodding for me. And also, I love Making Love. When I first heard it, I thought they were covering Toys in the Attic.
Right.
Yeah, Making Love, great scream at the beginning, great riff. Yeah, the fact that Kiss Alive 2 starts with four Paul Stanley songs out of five was all right by me, because, as you know, I was a Paul Stanley guy. So I'm going Making Love over Hotter Than Hell.
I'm going with Hotter Than Hell. So there's our first disagreement.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Peter's drumming on Hotter Than Hell, and the live version especially. So that's what does. It's a better groove than the studio version. And I don't know. Nothing against Making Love again, but Hotter Than Hell.
Like you said, too, both these albums are probably perfect records. They're both amazing. It's not even a contention. It's just what our opinions are.
We're not saying, oh, that one sucks.
Yes.
You know, they're both great pretty much in every case. So,
agreed.
Yeah. But I'll go with Hot.
Hotter Than Hell. Rip and Story. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Hotter Than Hell as well.
Ooh.
It is...
JBBS. Right
in effect, yeah.
Jones Brothers. Bull
shit
stuff.
Yep.
See what I, this is what I have to put, this is what I put up with for the past 5 years.
Actually,
relentlessly.
Jones Brothers' best siblings is what it actually stands for.
Don't you guys have a t-shirt? Where do you sell your t-shirts?
On, what is that? Tpublic.com.
Go to tpublic.com to get your Jones Brothers bullshit shirt.
Chris, I have a Jones Brothers bullshit throw pillow that's on this big chair that we have. That's the first thing you see when you walk in my front door, next room over. So,
so you're going Hotter Than Hell?
I'm going Hotter Than Hell. It's my favorite version of the song. Again, Chris J said. Earlier that a lot of the versions on these albums, they're a little more up tempo and there's more energy to them than on the studio albums for my perception.
I think by anybody's perception.
And right. I mean, and that's a hard one to say, because Making Love, there's for as much energy as there is on the studio version. I mean, that opening scream that Paul does, it's enormous.
Yeah.
And like the palm muting there, with the guitar, it always made me think of Communication Breakdown.
That's another. Yeah.
And, so that's a tough one. This one is Hotter Than Hell by a hair, maybe like 2-3 hairs.
It's one of those ones, you know, and Paul's voice notwithstanding, I would love to hear them play live.
Yeah.
You know, even on the cruise or something like that. But, and then that takes us to another love song, Making Love, Love Gun versus Firehouse.
Love Gun versus Firehouse.
What do you think? You want to take that one first, Andy?
Sure. I'm going to go with Love Gun. You know, we just talked about the great scream at the beginning of Making Love. Is there a more energetic introduction to any live song ever than the scream that goes into Love Gun? The, all right, Love Gun, which does no justice to it. But, you know, the Paul Stanley version, it's the greatest. So Love Gun, hands down.
Not to mention that Love Gun might be Paul's best written song.
Yeah.
It's such a great tune. It's one of Kiss's, you mentioned Got to Choose is one of your top three, Nick. It's Love Gun's one of my top 10. Even though I would never probably think that, I would try and go more obscure. But if you hear that song, for me, it's just great solo, well written, very easy to play when you're a kid, which is also a cool factor about it. And Firehouse, you know, I love the idea behind it. And that's when Gene gets to breathe his fire on this set and the whole sirens and all that stuff. Some good production. But as a song, Love Gun wins for me.
And also Live Gun, when you think of the live set, that's when Paul flies across the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now.
Yeah,
not then.
Not then. But, you know, that's always something that pops into my head as a great visual thing that's associated
with Live Gun. I'm surprised they've never had a record called Live Gun. Like a live record or an EP or something.
Making Live Gun.
Yeah, Making Live.
Live them and leave them. We can go on. There's a lot of love songs.
Live theme from Kiss.
Got Live for sale.
Live is a deadly weapon. Okay, stop. Stop.
Yeah, that's enough.
What do you think, Nick?
Firehouse for me. As much as I love Love Gun, Firehouse is just one of those, off of this record in particular, a live one, it's one of those like, the profound versions for me. It has such a groove after they do the, you know, the woo yeah, and then into that, you know, do. It's such a great groove, and it's such a great version of the song. And Love Gun obviously is a classic, and yeah, it's super, super off the charts energy on Alive 2 for that. But I just have to go with which song I've always preferred, and it's always been Firehouse.
That's the one, Chris.
Firehouse for sure for me. I have to be careful here because we haven't done Love Gun yet, and all I'm going to say on that is that is not to be missed as an episode when it comes down the pike from my perspective. And that's all I'm going to say other than that absolutely firehouse for me. I love the inclusion of the sirens at the end, just mass chaos breaking out and stuff. You can sense that there's something cool going on even though you don't get the visual.
Can't see it. You can hear to it. Calling Dr. Live. There's three love songs in a row. Calling Dr. Love versus Nothing to Lose. What do you think, Chris?
Calling Dr. Love for me. Nothing to Lose, never one of my favorites, to be honest with you. And Calling Dr. Love that's track three on Rock and Roll Over, right? So at that first summer when my boy Michael Gonzalez was running Rock and Roll Over for me on cassette, after I picked myself off the ground from listening to Take Me, this is another one. It's just like, this is friggin' awesome. Everything this band is doing right now is just resonating with me 1,000,000%. And Calling Dr. Love was the next song in that rotation. So I
gotta go with Dr. Love as well. And this is one of my, I like Gene, when he plays characters. And, you know, he is Dr. Love in this case.
Yeah.
And Nothing to Lose, always a throwaway track for me until once again, the Unplugged, when all six of the guys did it.
Right.
Peter's vocal is great. The fact that it's apparently about anal sex, which I don't know if is that true or not.
Yeah, I know. I think Gene confirms that.
I think
The book we always refer to, Behind the Mask. I'm pretty sure he all but explicitly confirms that.
This is something that I'm pretty sure we must have speculated about it on our episode for the song. It's like, pretty sure you have a lot to lose if you agree to anal sex in most cases. If nothing else, the bodily elasticity you were born with, and try to keep it clinical and polite, but that's just one entry on the list. There's a lot you have to lose.
Talk about Dr. Love over here. He's got a whole physical going on. What do you think, Nick?
I'm going to go with Dr. Love on this one. Thing that I love about this version, as opposed to the studio version, is the falsetto Dr. Love backups during the chorus.
From Paul?
I think it was Gene and Paul did falsetto in the studio to try to sound like women, I guess.
Oh, really?
I remember reading that somewhere. But on this one, it sounds a little like more gravel, like I don't know about gravelly, but it's a little bit, there's more energy behind it because they sound almost tired when they're doing that falsetto part on the studio
on the
version
album.
But this one, it's high energy, the song's a lot faster. I think it sounds great. I think Gene's got some he's got some great little variances on the way he sings the lead vocal. You know, that's definitely not to say that I don't really like that version of Nothing to Lose on a live one. I love when Peter uses his name when he says, but I think it's Shake It One Time for Peter or something like
that. Shake It One Time for the Cat Man.
But
I
think he says Pete or Peter on one of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm wrong, it's a different version.
But he's still referring to himself because it's either Peter or he says the Cat Man. Shake It One Time for the Cat Man.
I'm pretty sure he uses his first name in one of those.
Which is one of your guys' things. It's always cool to hear the name of a guy, you know, or a good mama, or like a pick up that guitar CC and talk to me, you know.
Yeah.
These are things that we contend are missing from rock and roll today.
That's right.
It's one of the reasons why rock is in the state it's in today. We need these things brought back in. So if you're one of the famous rockers that Mr. Jericho hangs out with on the regular, listen to our podcast. We'll steer you in the right direction.
We have some advice
for you. And hopefully bring the entire rock genre back up to the top where it needs to be.
That's the formula.
What do you think?
I love Peter's vocal on Nothing to Lose, but the song is just, it's not as good as Calling Dr. Love. So I go with Dr. Love, and also Paul's introduction again. We have to mention those whenever there's
right.
The rock and roll pneumonia.
Yeah, it's
pneumonia the way
he says pneumonia, but it's like with a weird, you know, New York accent.
I know everybody's hot. Everybody's got rock and roll pneumonia.
So let's call out Dr. Love.
That's one of the all-time great stages.
That's a heavy-ass riff, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now Christine 16, not a heavy ass riff, versus Come On and Love Me. To me, no contest whatsoever. Come On and Love Me, one of the best riffs. great weird lyrics. She's a dancer, romance. I'm a Capricorn and she's a Cancer.
Maybe best ever. Potentially.
Come On and Love Me, my all-time favorite Kiss song.
Your all-time
absolutely
favorite? Really?
Number one. And, wow. It's largely because of the lyrics. Is there anything more 70s than to invoke zodiac signs? So, I mean, back in the day, you'd see those holographic bumper stickers on cars with the guy's zodiac sign.
Scorpio.
And it's like, oh, if I'm compatible with the Scorpio, I'm going to go fuck that guy, you know? And it's like...
But you're right, though, and I'll even compound that upon, is there anything more 70s than having your picture in a music magazine?
Yeah,
which
exactly
barely exists anymore either, so it's a double whammy there.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Great solo. I just love Come On and Love Me. Chris obviously loves it.
Yep.
Jones Brothers?
Come On and Love Me, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christine's way better.
And then Paul's intro. Come on, love me.
Yeah.
It's like,
come on and love me.
You can't wait to tear into that song.
Yeah.
And who can blame him?
It's great. Nick?
Let me hide behind the furniture.
Oh, no.
All right.
Tell you mine.
JBBS coming at you.
I love this version of Christine 16. I'm going to go with Christine 16 and be in the probably overwhelming minority here. But everything about that version, just how booming Gene's bass is in the beginning,
boom, boom,
and the vocal performance. I mean, it's a great, great version of that song. And I mean, Come On and Love Me. I mean, this is another one where it's close. It's not that I can say anything negative, especially about this version of Come On and Love Me. But just for me, for what I have listened to more and enjoyed more, I would go with Christine.
And this
16.
Is the second in the trilogy of Gene the Pedophile songs that starts with Going Blind, continues with Christine 16, and ends with Domino,
right,
which
that's
we discussed at length.
Yeah.
Which covers pretty much almost the entire viable career of Kiss as a recording entity.
Now, if anybody didn't come here tonight to have a good time, please get out!
Okay, so then it gets to one of the... this is actually a coincidence how it worked out. It's the Battle of the Ace Tunes, Shock Me versus Parasite. And even though Ace didn't sing Parasite, we all know that he wrote it.
Mm.
Wow.
I can't do this.
This is a hard one.
This is the first one that's really hard
for me. I can't even do this.
Anybody want to tackle
it
first?
I'll tackle it first. Yeah. Just for me, it's Parasite. It's just heavier. It's great with Ace finally singing and, of course, the guitar solo. There isn't a guitar solo really on Live 1. There's
at the end of She. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is the next
But it's tune. Very short. It's not like this one. On Live 2. But for me, just Parasite, simply because it's heavier.
I noticed that there's a little bit of a mess up in the riff. This is a real nerdy thing. If you guys listen to Parasite, it goes like there's a little they kind of screwed up the riff a bit. So there you go. Check it out when you guys listen to this later. Anybody else want to tackle it?
I want to go with Shock Me.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, the first time you hear Ace singing other than the studio version, but, you know, he doesn't sing at all on Alive.
Mm-hmm. Good call.
And it's cool to hear him sing. I like the song better, which I don't want to get anything thrown at me from the other side of the room for saying that, but yeah, I love it. It's great. And, you know, we got a little surprise for you tonight.
Gonna turn the microphone over to Ace Frehley.
Yeah,
that's exciting to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And also there's a great breakdown right before the solo. That part is really cool. I'm going to go Shock Me. But if Parasite's a 9.9, Shock Me is a 10. Like, they're so close.
It's a hard one.
But it also has one of my favorite Paul Stanley things at the end. Ace Frehley lead guitar! Shock Me!
Yeah.
So, I'm going to take Shock Me.
This is the most difficult one, and it's going to be the most difficult one for me for the whole thing. I'm going to go Parasite, but these two live recordings, this Parasite off of Live 1, my all-time favorite Kiss recording song version of any other songs. Shock Me, when I was in like junior high and had just gotten this tape, I listened to this live version of Shock Me over and over and over and over. Like, it was my absolute favorite thing to listen to at that point. So it's really hard, but I'm going to go Parasite just because it's, as a song, it's my all-time favorite. So
All right. It
swings it that way.
It's like I said, it's 6½ dozen of another for that. Then it's She versus Hard Luck Woman. He wants to fight that one first.
Easy one for me. Yeah. She.
Okay.
I mean, Hard Luck Woman, it's cool for what it is, but that wasn't even the set. This was from the sound check.
That's right.
And they just shoehorned it in for, obviously, record company reasons.
So weird. Like, if you went to this show, you'd go, they don't even play half these songs live.
Yeah.
You know?
So, for me, it's just, again, She is heavier.
Yeah.
I tend to prefer heavier stuff, although, you know, I am a sucker for a good power ballad, no question about it. But between these two, easy, She.
I'll go next. I'm going to go with She also, even though I do very much enjoy the version of Hard Luck Woman. It made me think of, I think it's this song, it's one of the more unrealistic sounding crowd swells when they hear when the opening riff on guitar starts.
Yeah,
like you know what I mean? Like it probably didn't actually happen that way. Even if they didn't have it in the set list, if they had played it, I don't think it was that big of a hit or anything. So right. I don't know that the crowd would like the girls would have lost their minds and screamed like that. But both great. It's great to have the guitar solo from Ace. And isn't She the one where they have that part from the end of Let Me Know?
No, that's...
Yeah, isn't that on She?
It might be.
I think so. And I always loved that, too. So, and that's a great riff.
Yeah, I'm going to go with She as well. Although, once again, I didn't like as much when I was a kid. It's very slower and heavier, and I was never much of a guy, like a Sabbath type of a guy that liked the slower stuff. But once again, another great Paul Stanley at the end. Ace Frehley guitar. Yeah. He says it just as it fades out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that end part, the riff is heavy. It's a great tune. I think, did Anthrax cover She?
They did.
Yeah.
And I think they faded out on that riff, if I'm not mistaken. They did it just for a brief time.
Both are cool, but I'm going to go with She also, not to be the guy who piles on. But yeah. I like Ace's guitar solo, and I'm not usually a guitar solo guy. I'm not the guitar player of the group. Nick and Chris both play guitar. It's not my thing, but yeah, something about it. I love that like slow bend thing Ace does. Yeah, that's cool. That's like
that was his trademark thing.
Yeah,
it was like his Angus Young. Bam, bam, bam. He did.
And I'm looking at this Gene Simmons action figure from a live era that I have in my hand right now, and I think She's one of the signature songs from that album for Gene. I'm giving it to She.
There you go. That leads us to, I think, another song that wasn't ever played live, Tomorrow and Tonight versus Watching You. I'll take this one. I'm going to go Tomorrow and Tonight. I always kind of liked, just kind of like...
CJBS right there.
A little frivolous type of thing. I don't know. It's a song you could just drink a beer to and you know, look at chicks.
All toe tapper, right?
A little toe tapper, yeah. Although Watching You is pretty badass too, though, I think about it. But I'm sticking with it. Tomorrow and Tonight.
I'll go Watching You. It's a really great song. And one of the versions that I actually think in my head is Alive 3. Because that was a pretty good surprise track that they threw on there.
That's a good point.
But the one on Live 1 is great too, and I have to say I really like Tomorrow and Tonight, but I'm gonna go Watching You. And Tomorrow and Tonight is basically, if I'm not mistaken, I think I read in the book that we reference, it's basically Rock and Roll All Night Part 2. That's they were going for that again.
Gotcha. Watching You, to me, the part I don't like is like bam bam, because kind of felt kind of boring to me. Chris,
I couldn't disagree with you more on that.
Chris L. Bullshit.
Yeah, the Watching You by a mile, and never really liked Tomorrow and Tonight. Even before reading about it in the book, it just always sounded like a pale attempt at Rock and Roll Night to me. Just didn't do it.
Is it a little bit of a flag on the play when you rhyme a word with the same word? Tomorrow and Tonight, Tomorrow and Tonight, we can rock all day, we can roll all night. I mean, that's lazy.
Yeah, it's a little lazy, but just the song in general never did it for me. Watching You is in my top 10, might even be in my top 5.
Wow.
That song rules, and that the Winterland performance of that song from Kissology Volume 1 is probably my favorite Kiss performance of all time. They were on fire. Menacing, awesome, love it.
So, right?
I agree with you, Chris, on the Winterland version, but
If we're taking the visual out of it, I'm going to go with Tomorrow and Tonight. If we were watching Winterland version of Watching You versus how, well, they didn't even really do Tomorrow
Never,
Tonight, but
ever.
Yeah, but that might change things. But just listening to the two, which is what we're analyzing here, comparing those in a grudge match, I'm going with Tomorrow and Tonight. It's more of a pop tune, like Tooge over here said, but it's more of a pop tune. But as we get further into this, I'll be talking more about that.
I think they just recently played Tomorrow and Tonight on the cruise. I think they opened the Sail Away set with one.
That's cool.
From what I remember, yeah. Nick?
And let's not overlook the great scream that Paul gives as soon as there's that opening riff, and then once the drums and the bass kick in, the really great howly scream that Paul does on the live version. I mean, he if whether you like that song or not, there's an undeniable enthusiasm that's happening there.
Which one did you choose?
I did mine already.
Gotcha, sorry.
I just, yeah.
Okay, so then we go to, this is a good one, but to me it's I Stole Your Love versus 100,000 Years. I'll kick it off. This song and the next one, which we'll get to, are probably my two favorite Kiss songs of all time live. 100,000 Years, I love the riff, Paul's vocal, the drum solo, the rap, which our drummer Frank can do to a T, by the way. He actually does it for money. You bet Frank $10, he does everything. He's like, oh yeah, and I forgot the white people over there neither. So 100,000 Years, although I love I Stole Your Love. They opened with that on the Hot in the Shade tour, which was a great opener. It wasn't Detroit Rock City, but it was pretty close. Once again, 9.9 and 10, but I think 100,000 Years is one of my favorite all-time live Kiss songs out of these two records.
I'll go next. I am going to go with 100,000 Years just barely, because I Stole Your Love on this. It opens up record number two, side C. And there's just from that first hit and then the riff comes in, it's like they're different, different sides of what Kiss does, because that one, I Stole Your Love, is like just a direct powerhouse song that just they plow through. While 100,000 Years, you've got like these breakdowns and the raps and the drum solo and all that stuff and like the phasing on the drums. But what puts it over the top for me is I remember being pretty small and we had that record and I was listening to this on like a Fisher-Price record player. And when it gets to that point where there's that guitar lead, that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that part gave me goosebumps.
Yeah. And 100,000 Years?
Yeah.
Great solo, yeah.
When that lead part comes on, yeah, and it's still when I hear it, when I hear that particular version with those chords behind it, those like weird dissonant chords and that lead, that right there is just, that's like a musical.
I can air guitar that lead perfectly.
How much you want to bet? I got $5 here.
Chris? Oh, Nick? Or Andy?
I'm going to go with I Stole Your Love.
Okay.
Good
100,000 Years is a little bit more prog in a way. You know,
it's very 70s live album where there was always one track that was like 15 minutes long. This is the one, yeah.
Yeah, and I like the faster, shorter, direct song, so I'm going to go with I Stole Your Love.
Yeah, and for me, it's all about the matchup, you know, the head-to-head. Yep. You got to make tough decisions, but I Stole Your Love takes it. That's another top five Kiss song for me. And just the guitars are red hot on that cut. Man.
It's a great tune.
They are loud. They are on the brink of feedback to the whole thing. The lyrics are great. The, I'm something different. Ain't like the rest. I mean, that is just so great. The lyrics are
outstanding.
And if you've ever seen the Ernie Ball String Theory videos where the electric guitar string company has like artists talking about stuff, they did a Paul Stanley episode and he just starts playing that riff and I'm getting chills just so talking great. About it. And don't talk to me about Kiss not being able to play their instruments or write good songs. You're wrong on both counts based on I Stole Your Love alone.
When I was a kid, I thought it was called I Want Your Love. I want your love. But yeah, just like you said, you can't get angry about either one of those.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's all about the matchup.
And that's
really
what the fun, that's what we do here on the Classic Album Clash. Sometimes people go, oh, this album's way better until you do the breakdown. Okay, so now the next tune is Black Diamond, my all-time favorite Kiss song, Gun to Head, Black Diamond Live from this record. Alive. I don't want Black Diamond Studio, any of the other ones. From this record, that's my favorite Kiss song.
Wow, okay.
Up against Beth, no contest. Sorry, Peter. Black Diamond blows it away. Great ending for the end of the side three. Out on the Streets for a Living, Peter's vocal. Once again, what a coincidence. Two Peter vocals against each other.
Yeah.
And just to me, it was amazing that they had three drummers in the band that all had similar voices.
Yeah, was that a requirement?
I don't think they even knew. And Eric said when he joined the band, they didn't even know he could sing at first.
Wow.
So that's just, you know, Eric Carr did a great job with it. Singer does a great job with it. But that's Peter Criss's masterpiece for me, his vocal on Black Diamond. And just like the, and the solo. Ace, just that one part where he just bends that note so high. It's just, Black Diamond, man. What a great, great song and a great live performance. 1,000% Black Diamond.
I'll go. Black Diamond for me. And I'll throw the disclaimer out that we're probably all thinking. Beth's a great song for what it is. You know, important song for Kiss and all that stuff. But yeah, there's really no contest here as far as something being performed in a live setting. It's night and day. It's got to be Black Diamond.
Yeah. It's not to knock it. I know it's a hit, but you know, a track being played over a PA system. It's basically karaoke versus Black Diamond. So you have to take Black Diamond in that case, right?
This is when they would have Peter sit on a stool and throw roses out. Yeah. It's like, give me a break.
Yeah, so yeah, Black Diamond.
Take your dollar and beat it. Right.
Roses sprinkled with a little nose whiskey, probably. But anyway, I'm going to agree with everyone, but I'm going to throw this out there. What did I say on the car ride up here? For me, Black Diamond is probably the most overrated.
Really? Wow.
And it's funny to hear you. It's your all-time favorite. I have a friend who hates Kiss, loves Black Diamond. But for me, it's just, it never really did anything for me in a way that you react to it. I don't dislike the song, but it just never really got me charged up like some of the other stuff. So for me, that's why I say it's overrated. But compared to Beth, get out of here,
get out of town. This is a good one though. Rock Bottom versus God of Thunder,
our namesake basically. God of Thunder.
Mine too.
Yeah, right.
Which you guys hated me before you met me. That's and not, I came up with true. Pot of Thunder, not even knowing that you guys existed.
We were well aware of that. We didn't.
You know where I got it from?
Where?
Was Adam Carolla calls himself the Pod Father.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, what's another? Oh, God of Thunder. I'll be the Pod of Thunder. And then I start getting hate mail from Chris L.
I didn't send it. I sent some of our flunkies out to harass.
Oh, they
you
came to my house. There was some, I believe it. There were some threats made.
And then I got the private message on Twitter from Jericho. Are you guys near Indianapolis? I'm like, oh my God, he's coming after us.
And where are you right now?
That's how the relationship was born.
That's how I became friends with the guys that do Kistry Science Theater. Is I made a list of the worst Kiss songs, and for some reason the guy was mad at me. He's like, Jericho's worst of Kiss songs. What an asshole! How can he have this song on? So I tweeted them too. I find all you guys, all you Kiss podcasters that don't like me. I'll find you and make myself friends with you and change your mind.
Yeah, right. He did. It certainly worked.
To be fair, before that, Andy always would say, well, before we heard from you, Andy would always say that, hey, if I had the chance, I would just go join Jericho's podcast.
Right. I said, I'll jump ship. You guys can complain about it. I'll join his
long
team.
Before he was saying that.
Okay, so Rock Bottom versus God of Thunder.
Oh. It's a tough one because, again, you know, our namesake, we should be, you know, loyal to that, but I'm going to go with Rock Bottom.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's a short, cool song. The introduction's cool.
Great guitar part.
Yeah, great guitar part. And God of Thunder, to me, we haven't done it on our podcast yet, but especially the live version with the drum solo, I don't need it. It's similar to 100,000 Years where I was saying,
I don't want it.
I don't want it. Yeah, I don't need a 10-minute track. So I'm going to go with Rock Bottom.
Nick?
I'm going to go Rock Bottom. Even though I do enjoy the almost double speed version of God of Thunder that we get here. Mm-hmm. And I always loved when they came out of the drum solo that they didn't fix when Gene... He does
his
total clan. We laugh about that all the time. It's
and
so bad.
I love that they left it. Yeah. They didn't take that out.
He goes, "Oi! I'm the Lord of the West." It's like, what? Oi!
And Rock Bottom I love this version even more than the studio one because Paul goes higher with a lot of the notes vocally than he does on the studio version. The studio version's a little more tame. This one's just like a full blown hard rocker. And that dreamy intro is great when they transition from that. So, yeah, I love, love, love this version of Rock Bottom.
Chris?
Another tough matchup, but I'm going to give the edge to Rock Bottom, mainly for its brevity and non-inclusion of a guitar or a drum solo. It's like, you know, I understood you guys in the 70s. You had to duck backstage and get your win back, maybe bang a groupie or two. You know, do a little Tootsie Rootsie to get you through the rest of the set. But I don't need to hear a good drum solo. Apologies to John Bonham, but I don't need it. So Rock Bottom for me.
I am going to be the standout and take God of Thunder. I think it's Gene's trademark song. Mm-hmm. Once again, love the clam.
Written by Paul.
Yeah, right. Love the clam that they leave in there. The drum solo is more of just an obligatory piece of it. I think it lasts 30 seconds, maybe. Yeah. I love that you can hear Peter yelling.
That's actually my favorite part of this version.
And then, once again, another great Paul Stanley. Peter Chris on the drums! Yeah. I actually did a Hollywood Game Night, which is Jane Lynch's show. Mm. And they had me jamming with the band and had me play drums. And at the end of the whatever we were playing, I yelled out in the mic, and you couldn't see me, but you could hear this random, "Peter Chris on the drums!" So yeah, God of Thunder for me, and once again, you can't beat that riff. So that's my choice, which leads us to another Gene classic, Cold Gin. Wow, this is a tough one, Cold Gin versus I Want You. Now, once again, Nick, give us a little bit of the opening rap from Cold Gin, which I love. It's like, it's so hot outside, you always need something to cool you off. So let's go drink some tequila. Well-known refreshment.
Right, yeah. It's the least appealing.
It's so hot, I need some tequila, man.
Right. My favorite moment in Paul Stanley stage rap
history
is the implications of it. It's... the non-specifics. I was talking to somebody backstage before.
Yeah.
I love that setup. And a lot of you, they were telling me, a lot of you people like to drink vodka and orange juice, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, let me say something. I used to actually, when I first heard this, I wasn't a drinker yet, but I remember thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to drink vodka and orange juice.
Yeah.
Because just how cool Paul says it. Vodka and orange juice with his accent. And to the point where when I worked in the bar in Calgary, a Paul Stanley was what I called vodka and orange juice.
That's great.
And whenever I came into the bar, "Chris, you want a Paul Stanley?" "Yeah, let me have a Paul Stanley." Mm-hmm. "Two Paul Stanleys, please." So a Paul Stanley is a vodka and orange juice.
I did the same thing when I started drinking, but it was one of those experiences where you'll never drink it again because you vomited. So never again. And I also was watching Beverly Hills Ninja at the time, so I won't watch that movie ever again either. Those are both banned from my life.
What are you taking, Cold Gin or I Want You? Who's going to start with this one? It's a classic.
I'll go first.
Yeah,
I'm going to take Cold Gin, and this is another one where I love both songs. There's a lot of energy. That breakdown, instrumental breakdown in the middle of Cold Gin, that's another goosebump moment for me when they get into that. That's another goosebump moment for me. This is just my personal experience here, but the beginning of I Want You on this version, it gives me a little bit of anxiety.
Why?
Because I must have touched a magnet to my tape, which I'm holding right here, because it fades in and out, the volume, and it's like unlistenable for I Want You and Shout It Out Loud. Like I could never listen to those because there was something wrong with my tape. It was like this. Kept going in and out, and so nothing against the song, just a little tidbit I wanted to throw in there.
For you personally.
But Cold Gin,
Okay. I'll go next. I'll take Cold Gin as well. for all the reasons that you said. Once again, it was a great number in the Animalize set. It still translated when Gene was out of makeup, which I think is why they stopped doing God of Thunder, because Gene has to be in makeup for that tune.
Yeah.
Also, I Want You is a good tune. The end sing-along is very kind of generic Paul Stanley. Like, it's just, eh. It's one of the rare faux pas on a Kiss live record where I think it's okay. But Cold Gin combined with that awesome rap is amazing. Yes. You know, we talked to someone backstage before, and we need to get cooled off by a fine shot of tequila.
Yeah,
and the with the Mexican stereotype in the back.
Right.
Yeah, definitely Cold Gin for me, Chris.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree, Cold Gin. I think the live version, for the reasons you just said of I Want You, they actually made it worse in the studio version for me, which is unusual, especially just how hot the guitar sounded on a live too. You'd think you'd like it better. Cold Gin, I had dozens of Paul Stanleys on my bachelor party in Las Vegas during the Super Bowl, where the Rams beat the Titans on that last minute play that didn't get in the Super Bowl, and that led to all manner of debauchery that night.
Lots of Paul Stanleys.
But my favorite part of the rap is the there's only one thing that's gonna do it the way you want it.
Yeah.
And you know,
do it the way you want it. And which way is that?
So Cold Gin.
Andy?
I'm gonna go with Cold Gin too. It's a clean sweep. And you're on the road with Fozzy. Have you ever had anyone backstage come up to you and let you know what people like to drink in each city?
Well, I was talking to someone backstage before.
Chris, here are the notes. We've done our studies.
Excuse me, sir. Can you tell me what people are into in this town?
Oh,
they love to drink. Really? Can you tell me more?
Yeah, we need a list.
Well, some of them like to drink tequila.
Give me a top three.
I'll remember that.
I want to share that with them to let them know I did.
What else does he say? Tequila? Does he have another thing?
Vodka and orange juice.
And tequila. But there's only one thing that's going to do it the way you want.
Well, then he said, take a taste of alcohol.
Yeah, generic.
Generic, yeah.
No, this is a good battle. This might be the battle of the album. Although, I know some of you guys don't like us. To the random person, Shout It Out Loud as a set closer versus Rock and Roll All Night as a set closer, even though it's not the set closer on Kiss Alive.
Right.
But Rock and Roll All Night versus Shout It Out Loud. Chris?
I'm going to go Rock and Roll All Night. Andy will speak more to this, but again, Shout It Out Loud is kind of overrated for me. Never really blew my skirt up to a great extent. So in Rock and Roll All Night, while it's not something I really ever need to hear again, when I do hear it, I never shut it off. It's just a timeless classic. They needed to write an anthem. They stepped up to the plate and knocked it over the fence. So Rock and Roll All Night for me.
Andy will also go with Rock and Roll All Night. And Chris mentioned the Shout It Out Loud thing. When we broke that song down on our podcast 3 or 4 years ago, I still get hate mail to this day. I think I got some today. About me shooting down Shout It Out Loud, saying that, in my opinion, it was a generic attempt at trying to write another hit, and it just comes across as being, I don't know, not authentic and too contrived. So that's what I think. And this version of Rock and Roll All Night is the version of Rock and Roll
Absolutely.
All Night. And this, and you know, if we want to talk about the importance of a specific song off of either of these albums, Rock and Roll All Night is the song that catapulted them to superstardom, you know, because it wasn't a hit the first time they released it off of Dressed to Kill. They put this live album out with, you know, I don't know if this is sort of rewritten history, but when you hear Kiss talk about it, nobody had high hopes for Alive. And, you know, they put this out as a single.
This was
live.
Like their last chance.
Yeah. It's right? Gene said, who buys live albums and who likes Kiss? You know, this isn't going to do well. And it's a double live album. This is going to be a flop, and that's the end of Kiss. But it turned out the exact opposite, and this was the single they released. So
I think that I'm going to go with Rock and Roll Night because I love that. If you listen to the version that's on Dressed to Kill, it reminds me of the version of I Want You to Want Me on whatever Cheap Trick record it's on. It doesn't come alive, no pun intended, until it was on Budokan.
Yeah.
It's faster. Right. It's a better song. And Rock and Roll Night with the Ace's guitar solo, there's no guitar solo in the original. It's 2 minutes and 25 seconds, and then it fades out. Mm-hmm. This adds that solo. It's got a great ending, the sing-along. It's Kiss's signature tune, man, Rock and Roll Night, and the signature version of it. Shout Out Loud is cool, too, but it's not up to snuff, although I do like the fact that Paul says, call all your friends in the neighborhood, and then he yells out, "Hello! Call all your friends in the neighborhood! Hello!"
I was going to bring that up when it got to me.
Okay,
actually, yeah. You know, I actually was, because that's a standout part of that.
That's because the call got a little static at that point. Like, hello! Hello.
Whoa, I don't hear you. Are you there? Rock and Roll All Night, it has to be. Shout It Out Loud is great. It's a pretty good version. But that's Rock and Roll All Night off of Alive is the definitive like introductory track for somebody getting into Kiss.
Yeah, what's Kiss? Here you go.
Here you go.
My first Kiss experience that I could remember was, you know, like a Headbangers Ball. They played the Exposed, video with the Alive version.
Right.
And that's just that right there that made me a Kiss fan. So
it's interesting to me, like I said, that they didn't close the record with Rock and Roll All Night.
Well, yeah, I don't understand why.
It's very strange.
Was it a situation where that's the end of the show and then Let Me Go Rock and Roll is supposed to be the encore?
Maybe at the time, like you said, maybe they didn't expect Rock and Roll All Night to be the hit that it was. Now, in retrospect, we look back, but at the time, maybe they like Let Me Go Rock and Roll better for the end of the show.
Yeah, maybe.
And like I said, that's the end of Kiss Alive live tracks. They go into the studio, so we just choose All American Man because it's the next one versus Let Me Go Rock and Roll. I know it's a little bit of a different vibe, but it's the rules that of the classic album Clash, and it's my show, so I don't care if people don't like it.
Thank you.
So what do we think here? All American Man, which I think we can agree is probably the best of the five.
I will not agree.
Okay.
I'm a Rocket Ride guy.
Well, okay, Rocket Ride.
Those are...
Yeah. But Rocket Ride...
Nose and nose.
He's a Rocket Ride guy in more ways than one.
But I would suffice to say that maybe nobody else in Kiss even played on Rocket Ride. I think All American Man at least has a chance that maybe the band still showed up and played, so... I'll choose All American Man versus Let Me Go Rock and Roll.
If you take Rocket Ride out of the equation, then yeah, I'd
okay.
Go with
so
that
let's
one.
Say All American Man versus Let Me Go. Anybody want to take a crack at this one first?
I'll start. Okay. All American Man grew on me over time. Originally, I didn't care for anything on side four of Live 2 except for Rocket Ride. As a kid, you know, had this my entire life that I remember. We listened to a Live 2 all the time,
right?
So, you know, as a kid, I didn't care about any of them other than Rocket Ride. But over time, when I became an All-American Man, a 5'10 hot look All-American Man.
Now, is it hot look or hot luck? A 6-foot hot look.
I thought
six
it was hot
foot
look.
Hot luck.
I've always heard hot look, but
okay.
Who knows?
I don't know what he's saying, but I know what I'm saying.
Hot luck is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
too.
Well, he might have hot luck, but I have a hot look, so I'm going to stick with that. But
you were much hotter when you had your mustache.
Yeah, I know. You know, my wife keeps telling me to bring it back, so maybe it's time.
I think
if the two of you are telling me, then I think I'm onto something with that mustache. Expect it next time we run into each other. But head-to-head, All-American Man, you know, like I said, as I became a man of the world, that song grew on me a lot, you know, lyrically and just the testosterone shot when it kicks in. So I'm going to go with All American Man.
Ooh, okay. I like that you chose that because it shows that this was a good way to go. Chris?
All American Man.
Ooh.
All the way. That's a top 10 Kiss song for me. Just massive amounts of swagger and just the essence of Paul Stanley captured in one song. And that was the same way with the studio tracks. I thought it was a little bit of a ripoff that the whole album wasn't a live one, so I kind of dismissed the whole studio program as it was on the 8-track.
Oh, but, Chris, what's the first word of All American Man?
Get it?
Mama.
Oh, well, there you have it.
So there you go.
Yeah. But I love... Rockin' in the USA, not so much. I mean, it's okay, but I love the other four, and All American Man is tops for me. So,
all right, what do you think? Where'd you go, Nick?
I'm gonna go. Let Me Go, Rock and Roll. As much as I do, All American Man's a song where, yeah, when I was a kid, I'm like, I don't really. But when you get older, you kind of get it. You're like, you know, okay, I want to be this All American Man. You know, like.
How do I become this?
When you're younger, it's like, oh, I don't really know what he's talking. You know?
Yeah,
I don't get the whole vibe of what's happening when you're a kid. But Let Me Go Rock and Roll. I think it's interesting that I'm gonna go ahead and say that I'm pretty confident it has. It seems like it's an encore track because the crowd's got that clap going.
They're clapping. It's also kind of on a phase. Isn't
so it's
it?
Yeah, a little bit, and it's kind of a thing where like, okay, the crowd wants them back. It's kind of feeding into that, but. I don't know.
Several people in the crowd had the clap going on back in the 70s.
Looked like when we were at Cobo Hall, it looked like the whole building had the clap.
Yeah. We saw the Alive 35 show there.
Oh, okay. They went to Cobo.
Yeah.
That's cool. When I went on when we played the Kiss Cruise, they did Alive in its entirety, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
And I remember telling Paul, like, our drummer Frank knows the whole rap, and Paul, like, in his classic Paulism, was like, yeah, I'm not here to recreate the past. I'm not doing the same rap.
All right.
If your drummer wants to hear the rap, then he can do it. I'm like, calm down,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, like, we're just saying that's dude. Cool. Like,
I'm not recording you right now.
We're just fans.
I always found Let Me Go Rock and Roll to kind of be a tacked-on song, like I mentioned. It, to me, Rock and Roll All Night should have been the end of the record. Maybe they needed to fill some time with side four. It's kind of a loose song to me. It's more of a jam song. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have much of a hook.
It almost sounds like when they're like, as it's going on, it would be like if there was a lead singer, like an Elvis has left the building.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying.
Like they just keep playing it out, yeah. And like all right, good night.
Like,
you know?
The Blues Brothers when the guys sneak out in the air vent and the band just has to keep playing. And that's what it kind of reminded me of and confused me. I know they play it a little bit here and there. I guess it's a cool song if you're listening to it in the background. But All American Man, like you said, it's got that chorus. To me, it was always the best of the five. I know it's Bob Kulick on guitar, but there's a great solo in it. So I'm going to take All American Man as well.
All right.
So there you go, guys. Alive 1 versus Alive 2. Mm-hmm. You have to pick your favorite. Which one do you choose, Andy?
I choose Alive 2. And it's not easy, but like I said, it's been in our, you know, as long as I remember being alive, Alive 2 was my favorite record by anybody. So Alive 2, and, you know, I've had, you know, every moment of my life, Alive 2's been there. So, and even like, I had like one bad near-death experience in my life. And on the way home from the hospital, put the Alive 2 CD in and went to McDonald's because those are the two things that make me feel alive. Alive 2 and a 2 cheeseburger meal. And
Alive 2 cheeseburger
meal. Yeah, exactly.
Is it McDonald's what caused the near-death experience?
Well, not at that age. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Andy's first aid kit contains those two items.
I'm going to go with Alive 1 by just a little bit, mainly because sonically I prefer it. There's something about it. It sounds maybe slightly more dated, and for some reason that works for me. And but it's hard to go against Alive 2. But yeah, I'm going to go Alive 1 just barely.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm the same reason as Nick. I'm going to go with Alive 1. You talked about Cheap Trick at Budokan. The crowd noise on Alive 2 reminds me of that, and it's a little more like teeny bopper-ish, more kids in the crowd, which there were, and more girls, which is not a bad thing. But also like Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl, just the shrieking females and stuff. Alive 1 has more of that 70s just arena rock vibe to it, both visually and sonically.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Alive. Like I said, I mean, Alive 2 was the one that I was weaned on, and I love it. It's great. But Alive, I think, is probably my favorite Kiss record, like I said, for so many reasons. Basically, with the foundation of 100,000 Years in Black Diamond, I think those are the two best songs for me on both of these records. Mm-hmm. And I also love the fact that Kiss Alive, they had no idea to expect. They were throwing everything at the wall. And it sounds like it. They're desperate. They're hungry, and they were taking a chance. Whereas Alive 2, now they're kings of the world. They're the hottest band in the world now. Whereas before, they were the hottest band
in the land,
self-proclaimed. So, once again, both great records, but I'm going to take Alive. And I think we had a pretty good classic album clash today. It was a good one.
Absolutely.
Glad we could do it again. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to when Pot of Thunder. We've only got a few songs left. I don't know if I'll be invited back or not at some point, but it's always a pleasure to come on your show.
Absolutely. We'll figure out a way to make it work. We'll
have to go to the Venus and Mars maybe or something. Like
we'll
that.
Start stretching to, you know, exactly. Obscure. Yeah.
Thanks, boys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we love you. Let me tell you something, people. You have made us feel awesome tonight.
All right. Thanks to Nick, the Garlic Dragon, Andy, America's little brother, and the mysterious and grumpy Chris L. You got to check these guys out. Pod of Thunder's final podcast episode is airing on Monday, 290, 291 or whatever it is, 5.5 years of analyzing every Kiss song, one song at a time, on each and every episode. So check it out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Then go back and listen to the entire Pod of Thunder catalog. Like I said, Nick, Andy, and Chris went song by song through the Kiss catalog. See what they had to say about your favorite or not so favorite Kiss songs. And like I said, stay tuned because I think there's going to be more Pod of Thunder upcoming after this last Kiss song. But thanks again to the guys from Pod of Thunder for doing one more Kiss episode with me right here on Talk is Jericho. Thanks for letting me use their name, the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll over here. The classic album clash continues. We've got a few more in the can. If you've got any suggestions, hit me up at Talk is Jericho and let me know what albums we can do. Remember, the criteria is they have to be two separate albums by the same band, and they both have to have the same amount of tracks on them. Or maybe we can expand it and do two classic albums, again, one against each other from different bands, but they have to have the same amount of tracks on them. Remember that. So hit me up at Talk is Jericho and give me some suggestions if you have some. Speaking of rock and roll, The Rock continues on Wednesday with the history of Fozzy. I sit down with Scott from Good Company podcast. He just had Rich Ward and Jose Mangan on, Head from Korn. A lot of great guys. And we're going to talk all about Fozzy. From inception to currently right now with the Judas Rising tour just concluding. So check it out, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So in the meantime and in between time, have a great weekend. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Drive safe, and a big yeah, boy.
It's just so true in the rough. You want to show me your stuff. But my money, you can't be too soon.